have we had the woke week yet?
Oh, I don't think we've had woke week. We have saved our stoves. Don't take my gas stove.
Mr. Speaker,
you're at the intersection of business and politics. This is the 14th and G podcast from Melman Consulting. Now, here's our host, Dean Hinkson.
Thank you for sending your podcast out at 14th and G. I am your host, Dean Hinkson, coming to you from downtown Washington, D.C., with my colleagues here at the firm, Republican Bruce Mellon and Democrat David Thomas. Here on 14th and G, we're going to cover all of 2024 in 24 minutes or less, or I won't charge you. Bruce, DT, welcome to 14th and G.
Thank you, Dean. Happy summer.
Yes, thank you for having us back.
Happy summer. Almost to the unofficial start of summer. Memorial Day weekend is coming up, and with it, the Memorial Day recess.
And the Hinkson seersucker suit.
You know, I gave up on seersucker. It does not flatter me. It really does not.
Did you attempt like a horizontal seersucker? Maybe that would help.
You know who's good on seersucker? Roger Wicker, senator from Mississippi. He's got the silver hair. That's who seersucker looks good on.
You strike me more as a white linen suit kind of guy.
There you go.
That would look outstanding on you.
I like a nice linen suit and a nice tall glass of lemonade. Well, lots going on the Hill. Lots going on in the presidential race. I mean, we're going to come back after Memorial Day for a June, July work period. But man, the Republican convention is early, July 15th this year in Milwaukee. That will interrupt the July work period as they head into the August break, and the Dems have their convention in Chicago on August 19th. Developments in the presidential race. I mean,
brainworm.
a new word has entered the American political lexicon. Brainworms. You know, I was telling Bruce, I watched RFK's sort of bio video. You know, the guy, he's got a good anti-establishment message. As a well done video. I was thinking, maybe, you know, who knows? This guy gets some traction. 48 hours later, I have brainworms. Maybe that goes up there with I am not a witch.
Did you really just say that RFK, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., has a good anti-establishment message? Could there be anything more establishment?
Hey, the Kennedy family hates his guts.
A lot of guys in linen suits drinking lemonade, you know, are very anti-establishment.
Well, he ain't going to win in Hyannis, that much we know.
Hey, if a real estate developer from Queens can lead the Republican Party, RFK can be anti-establishment. But speaking of Queens, Manhattan, New York, Trump has spent the last month in a Manhattan courthouse. That trial is coming to a close. At least the prosecution is rested there. That is his short-term challenge. The president's short-term challenge, man, despite spending a month in court, the New York Times Siena poll was out last week, and it was really tough for President Biden. Trump is up in five swing states, Pennsylvania, Arizona, Michigan, Georgia, and Nevada. Biden only up in Wisconsin. These guys have like lickety-split, oddly sort of came together. Two presidential debates have been agreed to. June 27th will be the CNN debate in Atlanta. And September 10th will be ABC, that pretty boy, John Muir. I think is going to lead that one, but they haven't said where.
He looks good in seersucker.
There's a guy that looks good in seersucker.
You know, I don't know if there was a question there or that was just a run through of where we stand. But I will.
I'll give you a question. Why, yeah. Despite all of Trump's sort of legal challenges, daily MSNBC's got the.
I will tell you exactly why, and I am going to talk about that Chiron, yes. Which we were chatting about earlier. It is almost impossible for any issue to break through over the past month since Donald Trump has been in trial up in New York. The Chiron that I took a picture of this yesterday because I want to get it right. This is on MSNBC, and Andrea Mitchell's there at the desk, and it says, breaking news. Underneath it, it says, Trump hush money trial in lunch break. They're actually calling it breaking news that they've broken for lunch, well, which is, it shows you, in all seriousness, it shows you the intense media focus on what is going on with him, which is well-deserved. This is sort of unprecedented territory that we find ourselves in. But how does one break through in a traditional presidential campaign when you've got the entire media establishment in the media capital of the world covering this sensational trial? And I won't go into the specifics of what's been testified there. But it is very hard to... I didn't want to say it, but you did.
It begs the question, though. Why is Biden getting creamed in the polls when it's been nothing but what one would assume is pretty negative news for Trump's reelect?
Well, I guess we're proving the point that there is... It doesn't matter what they're saying about you as long as you're talking about
There's no bad publicity.
There is no bad publicity, and I think that's what Donald Trump has made his almost 80-year career on. It is very tough for the president to break through, but I am encouraged that this actually reminds me of the 2020 campaign, in that Joe Biden's out there doing what he's got to do. He's campaigning. He's going to events. He's doing what one would do in a normal reelection campaign, making the case.
That's not what he did in 2020.
No.
He was in his basement.
That's exactly right, Bruce. Who's in the basement now? Trump's in the courthouse basement doing his trial. He is not campaigning anywhere. And I think there have been benefits to him because all he does is sit there and complain about, you know, it's complaints. Oh, I've been long retreated. Oh, I hate the judge. Oh, I hate Michael Cohen. Like, that is what gets covered every day. It leads the national news every night. It is the thing that is talked about online. And that is a bit of a challenge for our normal president who is trying to run a normal campaign.
There is a counter theory to this, of course, which is, because President Biden isn't in the basement behind a mask, because he's having to be out explaining whether it's Israel policy, which I tend to think he's doing right, but a lot of the Democratic base does not, or inflation, or trying to sell people on Bidenomics at a time when there's really high levels of uncertainty and fear about the economy, fair or unfair, that's what people say they feel. That could also explain why he's doing poorly. And President Trump, though, for sure, stuck in trial. I think there are a lot of folks, the underlying facts, tawdry and ridiculous, are all well known. The question now is whether a president who lies under oath, The question is whether a president who lies about an affair should be prosecuted criminally. I'm old enough to remember when folks didn't think that was impeachment worthy for a sitting president. And so there is, I think, some level of base anger enthusiasm on the Republican side. And for that matter, swing voters feeling like, I cannot believe Democratic prosecutors are investing this much time and money. And the media, which clearly is not even-handed about this, is investing this much energy in something that is disgusting and pathetic. But we've got serious problems all around the world and all around the country. And we're talking about whether or not the FEC entry of legal services was adequately disclosing, or whether as a result of that we ought to send somebody to jail. That seems like we're not focusing
on the
big
picture. Which was already litigated by John Edwards.
Well, it seems to me, Bruce, that you also would let Capone off on tax evasion under those circumstances. But, Dean, I pose this question to you. Somebody maybe there's another explanation out here, and this is, again, a challenge for the sitting president. But one of the smartest guys I know out here in town recently explained through – 6 charts. Yes. How
possibly on a Sunday morning
there is a discrepancy between the way people feel in their local community and the way they feel at the national level.
All trust is local,
and that is, I think, the challenge for the president going forward, is that actually people, whether it is you, do you like your congressman? Well, you like your congressman, you don't like Congress. Do you like your job? Well, you like your job, maybe you don't like the guy at headquarters. People are feeling a little bit better about their personal circumstances while still resenting what's going on at the national level. It's hard when you're the guy in charge of the national government to get your case across, but I believe there is time. And I actually think Joe Biden has a really good message here, that he just has to show people what he's done for 3.5 years and what was it like the 4 years before that. If he can make that a connection, he wins.
One of my favorite Melman charts, which we use in some of our presentations.
I'm loving this podcast.
Yeah, change election. Re-election rate for incumbent senators, 100%. Re-election rate for incumbent House members, 98%. It's all local.
Well, so I couldn't agree more that trust is local. What's interesting to me thinking about 2024 is the expectation game. I'm working up a new quarterly analysis, and one of the things that occurs to me is the name of the game for all of these guys right now is how low can you get expectations? And if you can clear a bar of like 3 centimeters, you're a rock star. So if Trump can not get convicted over something that many veterans in the Department of Justice, including in the Biden era, decided that's just not a case there. And by the way, as you know, there are multiple other cases against the president that are a lot stronger than trying to suggest legal services is insufficient transparency. You know, if you want to make a legal case against the president, this is the last one you'd bring, except it's the first one that got brought. So if Trump cannot get convicted, he has a big tailwind. If Joe Biden can show up at the debates and not have a senior moment, the Trump team has everybody expecting that he's going to come up like Cicero and just slice and dice. And if the president shows up like he showed up at the State of the Union, I think the relative to expectation, he's going to do great. RFK Jr. has to do, you know, spend a lot of money that he has somehow inherited now that he has a VP with a lot of money, get on a bunch of ballots, which shouldn't be that legally hard, although there are a lot of legal eagles trying to block him, and get on the debate stage.
Kennedys have no problem with inherited money.
It is amazing how low, look, the Dems in Chicago, all you got to do, if you cannot have 1968,
yeah,
you win.
Well, how many times, Bruce, do I have to remind you? The Republicans or the Democrats were in Chicago in 1996, renominated Bill Clinton, who went on to a great second term, a successful presidency, clobbered Bob Dole, whose most notable thing that he did during the campaign was, Dean, fell off the stage.
No, that was not the most notable thing.
Well, but more important, I'm not saying that the Democrats haven't had a convention. You've corrected me on that before.
Oh, yeah.
My point is, 68 was in Chicago, and it was a disaster because of protesters. The planners of the current Democratic debate are working really hard to avoid a repeat of that. They would like it to be like 1996, but the risk of it being 68 are not negligible. If they can just have a protest that is normal, it's a home run for the Democrats.
Of course, 1968 was so long ago that even President Biden wasn't there. So, you know, that's a long time. We're talking ancient history.
We might need to check the notes on that. Biden, he's elected the Senate in 72, right?
72.
Yeah. Yeah, he might have been there. He might have been a Delaware delegate.
He was elected very young. He was in grade school.
Well, low expectations, and you know, I'm fascinated by this debate. And of course, there's nothing more incestuously DC than a debate about how the debate came together. What is of interest is, you know, Republicans didn't seem to really learn the lesson of the State of the Union, where they, like you said, Bruce, they set these incredibly low expectations for Biden, where all he had to do was show up and speak right. And he largely accomplished that. And they're doing the same thing with the debate, it seems to me. But what's this going to look like when these guys get on the stage together? Everything that's happened since 16, everything that's happened in the last 4 years, it's just going to be wild.
Well, let me ask, do you think RFK Jr. will be in the room?
No.
I don't know what the metrics are, but it doesn't look
you
good
need
for
to
him.
Be on enough ballots that theoretically you could get to 270
votes.
And you need to be at least at 15% in a variety of polls. Before we get to that, if you were the RFK Jr. campaign, what would you do? Because I was thinking, if I don't get on the debate stage, I would counter program with as many celebrities as I could get, and I would have an event talking about how democracy's broken. One side, you would argue, is legitimately threatening democracy. They don't accept elections if they don't win. And the other side, to save democracy, is saying no choice for voters, only these two, nobody in our party, nobody in the third party. We're going to block as much ballot access as we can. I would have an event talking about why democracy's broken when it's a duopoly if I were the candidate.
A Joe Rogan Experience live podcast.
Genius.
Under the lights on the National Mall.
Number one, Joe Rogan isn't going to do anything to aggravate Donald Trump. Number one.
He said RFK should be at the debate.
That's fine, but he's not going to program over Donald Trump. Number two is, I think it's more likely that he'll do a push-up competition in Venice Beach. show off his muscles. Look, here
he's
is
very fit.
Here is the thing that I think is most encouraging about these debates is that they are ditching the audiences. And I think audience participation at debates, both at the primary level in particular, and the general, it is a distraction. Like, you cannot have a conversation.
Are you
with
calling
crowds.
Ken Bone a distraction?
That is a deep cut pull.
Yes.
And I'm very excited about that. Good call. I think that should make for a little bit more less of a circus atmosphere, which is a good thing. That's the way it should be. I don't know how the heck these moderators are going to deal with the interruptions. I know they're going to, say they'll turn off the mic or that sort of thing. These guys are on a small stage together. Other mics are going to pick things up, so I don't know how that's going to work out, but at least they won't be crowds cheering them on.
So what we do know is that I think it's fair to say that the Democratic forces won the debate about the debate. You know, whether it's thanks to Frank Farenkoff or others, far more people were reporting or otherwise arguing that the Team Biden got everything they wanted in the format. Team Trump clearly just wanted to have a debate, believing that that their guy is going to be a lot stronger. But the lack of audience, to your point, DT, the Fox and or not having Fox, just CBS and ABC. It's all the things you would have thought. I mean, the reason that the president pushed for it is probably because of the Sierra polls and others that you needed to change the game up. Whether they're right or wrong, it feels like it was a very strong media cycle for the president.
Yeah, no, I think that worked out well. Now we'll see how it goes during the debate. I think the biggest challenge, again, is Donald Trump is a guy who doesn't follow the rules on anything. And he is not going to follow the rules of this debate either. He is not going to respect time limits. He's going to interrupt. Even if the mic is off, he will complain about the mic being off. How, Jake Tapper, I guess, is going to do the CNN debate, right? Or Murray or whoever else is going to be hosting that is going to control him. That's my question, and I will tune in to watch.
But, of course, he arguably punched himself out at the last debate. To your point, Dean, he came off so aggressive. If your theory was Joe Biden can't answer a question, you can't prove it by not letting him answer a question. And so you would think, to the extent there's any coaching or any training, part of the deal has to be you need to, not interrupt the guy so that the guy can say stuff that you think is weak.
You going to deliver that message to him?
No, I'm not. I don't spend a lot of time at Mar-a-Lago.
Well, we have had voters going to the polls already in primary elections. Just one I'll touch on, our state of residence, the free state of Maryland. And DT, I'll give you congratulations. You called Angela Alsobrooks as the Democratic nominee for United States Senate. She'll face former Governor Larry Hogan as the Republican, who broke out an early lead. Well, I think everyone, including Governor Hogan, expects that to come back to earth as the race cements and nationalizes and all that. But you feel also Brooks is a better candidate than the gentleman from Total Wine.
It's not just that I feel that way. It's that over 10 percentage points of Maryland felt that way as well. She really crushed him.
After he spent...
outspent him 10 to 1. $63 million was what I saw.
Holy cow.
Boy, that's a lot of wine. And, but look, she ran a good campaign, ran a traditional campaign where the money that she did raise, she drove into get out the vote and was not doing nonstop ads in very expensive DC media market until the last week or two. So hats off to her. I think she will be a better candidate than Trump would have been in the general. You know, I know where you two feel on this race here, but I think Governor Hogan's going to have a hell of a fight in his hand.
I agree. It's a win. It's a win for Schumer. Win for the D's. Except that they don't have Trump's checkbook.
Right. That's a big L. Like, without a doubt, Maryland's a really hard state for a Republican to win. Governor Hogan won twice, so he's as strong and formidable an R as exists. As a rule, you assume a Biden plus 33 state is good news for the Dems, but they're going to have to finance her. Yeah. You can't just figure the state's lien is going to save you. So that is tens of millions of dollars you're going to need to direct from party coffers or from donors, and you're going to have to direct it away from Montana, away from Ohio, away from Arizona, away from Pennsylvania, away from a lot of tough battlegrounds.
The very fact that Democrats will have to spend money on a Maryland Senate race is a win for Republicans. I think Trone would have been incredibly beatable, and I think as a candidate, I think also Brooks gives them their best shot.
Well, the last senator, I just did a quick research here, Republican senator elected in the state of Maryland was sworn in about 2 weeks before I was born. His name was Senator Beal. Well, good luck. Howard.
When was the last Republican elected statewide in Maryland?
Not statewide.
I know. I understand. I think the same electorate.
Yes. And you know what? Maryland at the gubernatorial level occasionally elects Republicans. I also think that the electorate in Maryland is pretty savvy. What I don't think is going to happen is they're going to know a vote for Larry Hogan is a vote for, well, it's not going to be Mitch McConnell anymore, but whoever the Republicans are in charge of the Senate. And Hogan's going to have to answer for all the nonsense that's going to come up from every one of those Republican senators here. Good luck.
Well, we'll come back to that because I think I might like a wager on that race here at some point. But let's turn our attention really quickly to the Hill. We've got an FY24 probes done this year, the Foreign Aid Supplemental, FAA reauthorization, FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance reauthorization, done, and done. Working on FY25, you got the Farm Bill, the National Defense Authorization. There's a cryptocurrency bill on the House floor this week, and Senate Dems are going to take another crack at the border bill. When we come back, June, July, what does it look like?
I just can't get over this good working love affair between Speaker Johnson and Senator Schumer. They just keep getting stuff done. It is a pretty remarkable legislative list of accomplishments that they've achieved for anybody at the beginning of the year would have said nothing's going to get done coming out of the McCarthy debacle. And it just keeps going here. So look, are they going to get an AI bill over the finish line this year? It seems tough, but I'm not ruling anything out right now. Will they get the NDAA done this year? You bet they will. Are we going to get appropriation bills done? Yes. So there's more to get done this year. Typically you would say after Memorial Day, things sort of quiet down, but this is proving to not be a typical year.
Well, look, appreciate your implicit acknowledgement, which I think, Dean, you and I can also say we all, on this very podcast, badly underestimated Speaker Johnson. He's proven far more adroit in the role. To your point, DT, getting a lot of stuff done, being willing to work with the Democratic Majority Leader or Senate Majority Leader and knowing how to roll his own right flank that he used to be part of.
Standing up to his former colleagues in the Freedom Caucus.
It is amazing what a Republican speaker can accomplish when he's got the entire Democratic caucus backing him up.
Oh, boy.
I'm just saying.
One motion to table.
The MVP for Speaker Johnson should be Hakeem Jeffries.
One motion to table and you never hear the end of it.
We'll see how the rule vote goes on NDAA. I feel like they're going to need Dems on that one, too.
Like everything else.
Yeah, the one thing I don't know if you mentioned, DT, but I'm keeping my eye on for the summer is the so-called China Week.
Yep.
Where we expect a bevy of policies put forward by House Republicans aiming at the People's Republic and the Communist Party of China, the most bipartisan issue in Washington. There's not a lot of Senate floor time. None of those are a must instantly pass. But there is a lot of concern, and the fact that China is helping Russia's war effort, the fact that China is otherwise clearly on the wrong side of a lot of geopolitical issues, the fact that they may be trying to interfere with our elections suggests that there may be some tailwinds. So there may be some policy surprises for a lot of the business community.
Lots to come. China hawkery is a bipartisan issue, and this is a bipartisan podcast with my good friend, Republican Bruce Melman, Democrat David Thomas. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me on 14th and G.
Thank you, Dean.
Thanks, Dean.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast, brought to you by the lobbying firm of Melman Consulting. For more, just type 14th and G podcast into your favorite search engine or look for 14th and G wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe.
Beam me up, Mr. Speaker.